Welcome to the Dublin Festival of History podcast, brought to you by Dublin City Council. In this episode from the Dublin Festival of History 2023, Catherine Milligan discusses the work of artist Harry Kernoff. Born in London on the 9th of January 1900, Harry Aaron Kernoff was a prolific figure in 20th century Irish art. Well regarded for its portraiture and landscape painting, Kernoff often focused on the depiction of Dublin, a city with which he became intimately familiar after the Kernoff family moved there in 1914. Catherine Milligan is the author of Painting Dublin, 1886 to 1949, Visualising a Changing City. This episode was recorded at Pear Street Library on the 9th of October, 2023.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Hello, how are you? We'll get started. So, very warm welcome to you all. My name is Katie Milligan. I do see some familiar faces in the audience. Some of you might know me from the National Gallery and other art history things around the place, but it's lovely to be with you all here today. I would like to actually, just before I start, to thank Dublin Festival of History having me back for the third year, which is really, really lovely. The festival seems to get bigger and better every year. So for today's lunchtime talk, we're going to look at the life and work of Harry Kernoff, an artist who I think might be familiar to many of you here today. And if he's not, you're in for an absolute treat. He is one of my favourite artists, you know, right back since when I first started looking at his work many years ago now, and remains one of my favourite people, actually, to talk to in front of an audience, especially a Dublin audience, because often what I find is that many people still remember Harry Kernoff. They might have memories of him. They know his works from seeing them in pubs and other buildings around the city. And so I think it's lovely that he's still very much a part of the fabric of little pockets of Dublin. I will probably speak for about 40 or 45 minutes and then give time for questions, because I won't probably cover absolutely everything. So I really would encourage you to ask questions or to tell us any memories or anything that you would like. And then we'll be finished up and I suppose back to work at 2 o'clock for some of us. So let's get started. So this is the man himself. This is a photograph from about the 1920s, taken in London and showing Harry Kernoff as a young man. But who was he and where did he come from? Well, he was actually born in London, the eldest son of Isaac and Kate Kernoff, who had come to London from the town of Vitebsk, then in Russia, now part of Belarus. We find them in the 1901 census, living in Mile End in Stepney in London, and living very much among Jewish immigrant families. We know then in April 1914 that the Kernoff family come to Dublin, where Isaac Kernoff finds work as a cabinet maker, a trade that he would continue through his life, and which his son Harry would follow him into for a short time. When we look at Irish records then, we find them living at number 12 Raymond Street, first of all, just off the South Circular Road, and then settling, we don't have an exact date, but quite early on in their time in London, settling at number 13 Stamer Street, which is where Harry would live and work for the rest of his life. And a number of years ago, a plaque actually was put up on the house there. They would have been very much part of the Jewish community living around South Circular Road. It was known as Little Jerusalem at the time. So they would have had a lot of family connections, relatives and support from that community when they arrived. So we know that as a teenager, Harry was working as an apprentice to his father as a cabinet maker. Some of his early woodwork is still in the family's collection, and he certainly seems to have been very talented at it. But it wasn't, I suppose, what he was ultimately going to go on to do. We find him registered as a student at the Kevin Street Technical Schools before becoming an evening student at the Dublin Metropolitan School of Art in around 1919. As he's there, he is training to be an art teacher. He's training towards his art teacher's certificate. He also wins then in 1923 the Taylor Scholarship. And this was an annual prize. It's still given out today, run by the Dublin Society. And this was really important for young Harry Kernoff, because it meant He no longer had to be just an evening student. He could go full-time to the School of Art. He had financial support. His fees were paid. He also got a £50 scholarship, and he goes to Paris. So he gets a lot out of, you know, this relatively modest prize. We see him then, so this is 1923, right, 100 years ago, almost exactly. He's studying, he's working, and then in 1927, he holds his first one-man exhibition at number 7 St. Stephen's Green, and this was going to launch him, I suppose, into the world of the Dublin art scene. I'll just show you some early paintings. These are photographs of paintings. We see him here at the Dublin Metropolitan School of Art. He would have been taught by people like Sean Keating, but the influence of William Orpin was still very strong. So there was a huge emphasis on portraiture, on working from the body, working from yourself. So these are actually an early and a later self-portrait, but still dating to around the 1920s. And you can see, I hope, how his work changes. And this initial one here is very angular. There's that little bit of uncertainty. And then we see him, and I'll go to the colour one, this self-portrait from the late 1920s, the young and confident painter at his easel, holding his palette, these kind of landscape scenes behind him. So this was very much a statement from the artist. So in 1927, he holds his first exhibition. So what kind of things is he painting? Well, really, from the outset of his career, Kernoff is looking to the city around him and to the family life around him. He shows two paintings of his father's workshop. I'm showing you one here. There's My Father's Workshop Night and My Father's Workshop Day. Really looking at this place where he was still employed to a point. So the Irish Times note when he is showing these works that he is still employed as a cabinet maker in his day-to-day. So he's still making ends meet in different ways. But we get this lovely view of the workshop, his father working at the bench there, and the different kind of cabinetry and tools around him. But the city works that he's showing in this exhibition include a number of nocturnes, such as this work here, the tram, or Dublin Nocturne. We see the tram here coming over, I think maybe Charlemont or Portobello Bridge. There's this great sense of speed and motion. Of course, Kernoff would have known the urban paintings of the Impressionists, of the, you know, that kind of Parisian modernity, and he kind of captures some of that speed and excitement here. We see lots of hallmarks that are going to be, you know, are features that are going to become hallmarks of his work, that sense of people moving, these small little figures, never shown in great detail, but always in motion, walking past, stepping onto the pavement, stepping off the pavement, stepping onto the tram. We also see that in this work, which again was another of the nocturnes included in that first exhibition. And this is Harcourt Street Station. So if you kind of think about that station now, if you were standing at the Lewis stop, heading out to Ranelagh, this is what you would have been looking at, that central doorway of Harcourt Street, but not a pub and a railway station at the time. And we're looking in the doors. And again, through those central doors, you're seeing all of this busyness, all of this motion, people reading their papers, going hither and thither. And that's what he really embraced in his work. This work, unfortunately, this is a photograph. I don't know where the actual painting is, if it's on someone's wall, please tell me. It's a painting that I would love to see, because even from this photograph, you get a great sense of maybe what the colour would be like. The way that the lamp is lighting up the darkness, the horses, the carts, carriages, and this great sweep of advertising. I'm guessing that says Bovril if we were going right around the corner. But you can see even from these two paintings, this one and Harcourt Street Station, that area of the city, very close to where he was living in Portobello, around the top of Harcourt Street, that was somewhere that he was very comfortable, that he really enjoyed depicting. But there's also, I think, and maybe this is a little bit of my imagination, but in this painting, that little sense of the nightlife, the street life, of what else is happening in Dublin at that time. And of course, Kernoff, he's born in 1900. So in the 1920s, he's young, he's having fun, he's going out and he's making lots of friends. And that's where we can come to a painting like this one. Some of you might have seen this. It's in the National Gallery of Ireland. I don't think it's on display at the moment, but it should be. So we can all put that on our comment cards next time we're in. But you can see straight away, this is very different to what we've just been looking at, those, you know, kind of very readable urban scenes. What is this? Well, this, we think, dates to around 1934, and you'll see why in a few minutes I'm giving that an approximation. It's very colourful, it's very geometric. What we're looking at is Kernoff's version of the Danse Macabre, so a very traditional art historical theme where Death, who we see here at the front with his the skeleton, but dressed in kind of futurist armour almost here, leading this band of people into the great beyond as the sun sets behind them. So we have, as is, we would expect to find, representations of vanity. So our beautiful red-haired woman here looking into her mirror. We have greed and capitalism. You know, it's all there. We have these very strange kind of pharaoh-like figures here enforcing discipline. We, of course, have down in the far right-hand corner, as you're looking at it, the worker there with his hammer and the red bandana, and we'll come on to the importance of politics for Kernoff a little bit later. But this, you know, if we think of the roaring 20s into the 1930s, this has a lot of those kind of Art Deco features through its colour and its angularity. But this is where it's coming from. So when, as a young man, Kernoff is in art college and then kind of graduates from art college into Dublin's theatre scene. We're taking a little detour from actual paintings for a while, but this is equally important. He is part of the different cabaret groups that were working and operating in Dublin at this time. So we have Toto Cogley's Cabaret, which is what we're looking at here. He's part of the Radical Arts Club, who were, I suppose, younger artists who were trying to forge something new after the literary revival, the Celtic revival. They're interested in international modernism and new ways of looking at Ireland. And this is a tableau that we only know through a photograph, because this would have been made never to have been kept, showing some of the people who were involved with, you can see, this is the image on the far side, is the reverse of the photograph of the Studio Arts Club setting Noah's Ark at Madame Cogley's Cabaret in the 1930s at 41 Harcourt Street. So again, staying in that little corner of the city. So Noah's Ark is this tableau of animals with portrait heads stuck onto them. And we can identify some of these people. I haven't been able to get all of them. So again, if you do recognise someone that doesn't have a little label on them, please let me know, because I'm sure more of them can be identified. So of course we have Harry himself. He's on the body, I think, of a little monkey or something. Yep, you see him holding his tail. We have Sean Keating, who again, he would have been taught by in the Metropolitan School of Art. And Hilton Edwards and Michael McLeamore, again, key figures from theatrical Dublin. Dennis Johnson up the top, the playwright. And Kernoff actually designed costumes and sets for some of Dennis Johnson's expressionist plays. We have Gerald Crofts, William Mooney, P.S. O'Hegarty, and also Stella Stein here, so another Jewish artist from Dublin. They're the ones that I have so far, but I definitely think we could do more on identifying these. So this is some of the experimental work that Kernoff is doing. These are just some of the extant paintings that show some of the same people. So Stella Stein, Dennis Johnson, Michael McLeamore, and P.S. O'Hegarty as well. So that's the process of doing them. But this also, in that same group of photographs, which are in the Kernoff papers in the National Gallery, we see some of the preparatory work or other versions of that big scene of death. So it was, we know from this that it was conceived of as a mural decoration, probably for a nightclub. This is one version, the Triumph of Death, and we see some of the same figures. And then a little bit more like the painting, this one called To the Inevitable, a mural decoration, oil on canvas. And I think it says, death leading all back to the earth except revolution, who typifies progress, the setting sun, and a strong colour scheme. So Kernoff loves notation. You often find these on the back of his works as well. I'm going to just go back to this for a second, because I want you to look at it for another moment. So when a version of this, and as you say, it exists in multiples, so I'm being quite vague about which version, but the same idea was included in the Royal Hibernian Academy exhibition in 1927, and George Russell, or A.E., kind of comments on it in his review of the exhibition, and he said, Mr. Kernoff's big picture, which was a version of this, is clever, but I do not think it more than clever. The decorator has submerged the imaginative artist. The figure of death which dances at the head of the procession is merely a decoration, and there is nothing to awe us. I disagree, George Russell. I think this clever artist will react from his own fancies and become a realist. He has not enough of the poet in him to make his symbolic pictures purely poetical, but he has enough poetry, I think, to lift his realism out of the rut of dullness into which so many realists sink. And indeed, that is what Kernoff does. Those kind of colourful mural-type paintings, of which there are other examples, become a small and quite contained part of his career. He still does little decorative masks and watercolours and things, but they don't feed into his painting. But what he does turn to, or kind of continue to turn back to, is Dublin and to the city, and that's what we'll concentrate on for the next few minutes. So we're going to look at some of Kernoff's views of Dublin and bring in his politics and why maybe he was drawn to some of these subjects. So after he died in 1974, one obituarist, if that's a word, or someone writing an obituary of Kernoff, said that he was the artist of the workers, noting his, quote, identification over many years with progressive, radical and working class ideas. In the 1920s and 1930s, Kernoff showed his sympathies with the struggles of the unemployed, his drawings of men without work, the poverty that was around him, and of places of work, showing both his understanding and sympathy for the working people. And this really comes through in his depiction of Liberty Hall, which, again, there are many versions. This is just one. And of the area around the docks. And indeed, quite often the area around here, around where the Grand Canal Theatre is now, going down from Pier Street down towards the river. And I'm sure he wouldn't recognise what it has become now. But let's look at this depiction of Liberty Hall. This version is in ink and graphite on paper with a bit of ballpoint pen additions, probably later on, added in often his signature and that type of thing. But he first, again, drew this, or was drawn to this scene in the 1920s. There's also versions of, Liberty Hall, Summer's Night in watercolour. There's Full Night. Again, repeating things is a big part of his painting. But they always show the same thing. The original Liberty Hall that had been a hotel before it becomes the headquarters of the Irish Transport and General Workers Union, always with the lights on, the windows open, the door wide open. He's very committed to this idea of this building being a place that is open, that is welcoming, where people are meeting, going to classes, debating, all of that type of thing. It sums up a lot of what it was and what he wanted it to be. And again, we see that host of people going by it. So these are the people that the building and its cause are going to serve, the workers, the dockers, the women, the mothers with their children. So again, full of symbolism. We see it in other ways in his work. Many of you will know this, his woodcut of James Connolly. And I'm going to talk about the woodcuts more specifically a little bit later on. But here we have two of his two versions of James Connolly, one with Liberty Hall behind him and the kind of soldiers in between. And in the other version, we have the plough and the stars. If you're interested in this one and you are a bit of a collector and you like rooting for woodcuts, look for the one where you can see both, where he has overprinted Liberty Hall with the plough and the stars, because they do exist and they're quite rare. And so if you have one, lucky you. But often you see in the plough and the stars when you see the glimmer of Liberty Hall coming through. So we can think about why he might have done that, just preferred the plough and the stars. He reused everything. He didn't waste paper. It was a precious resource for much of his life, and so it was probably some practical reasons for that as well. We also see a recurrent theme in his work is the depiction of the unemployed worker or the kind of docker, the Dublin docker. We know as well that while this figure, who we see probably in both of these as unemployed and the Dublin worker, this is a portrait of a man called Jack O'Neill, who Kernoff had actually met him through a trip that he goes on to Russia, to the Soviet Union in September 1930, with the Irish branch of the Friends of Soviet Russia. Kernoff goes as an artist to explore what it was like to be an artist in Soviet Russia at that time, and O'Neill goes as a representative of the unemployed workers' union or movement. I'm not sure exactly sure, but we see him. This is a particularly strong one. His face, the strength of the face, the interesting details around the hat, and of course then the protest in the background, or a picket line with the "We Want Work" sign. So these themes come up again and again in Kernoff's work. You see it really in works like this. Again, this is from around 1930, the Dublin Dockyard. And you can see we're down at Dublin Port. That's the silo that you can still see sometimes as you're driving around by the port. The hull of the shipbuilding, again, all of the workers. So he's bringing together, I suppose, his interest in the city and in the labour of the city and what's being built to a scene like this. This is another of my favourites, actually, from 1931, a graphite on paper. I love drawings. I think it's because I can't draw. I really admire a good drawing. And the way that he is showing all of the ships, the simplicity of using one colour and different tonal effects to get that sense of that these hulking boats and the small then the smaller vessel bringing these men back to shore, and the detail of the steps going up. This drawing was actually reproduced in the Seristot Éireann handbook later in the 1930s, and it brings us into another interesting part of Kernoff's work, which was his contribution to books. And I thought, as we're in a library, we should have a look at some of these. So this is reproduced in the Free State Handbook, a wonderful book. These were three drawings from the 1929 Book of Dublin, which is a absolutely beautiful piece of publishing history, if you can get a chance to see it. Kernoff contributed three drawings. We have, if we go from left to right, the Jacobs Biscuit Factory. Here we have the Great Grain Silo at Dublin Port, which we saw in the background of the docks. And of course, at the end, we have a view across to the Guinness Brewery on Watling Street as well. So Kernoff's work was for a section of a Book of Dublin, which was all about the industrial parts of the city. So he picks these three big places, employers, factories, contributors to Dublin's industry. And I really like, again, the way that he's showing them very much as places of work. People going in and out, these constant crisscross lines of electricity and other things going in. You see it particularly in the grain silo, with obviously a lot of activity going on, and then Guinness's as well. He will go on to do a lot, or quite a few watercolours of Watling Street, again, a place that he seems to have really enjoyed visiting. Let's talk a little bit about his work in woodcut, sticking with the book theme. Over the course of his career, Kernoff publishes three books of woodcuts, two of which are published by the, I think one by the Talbot Press, sorry, one by the Sign of the Three Candles, Colm O'Loughlin's publisher, and one that is privately printed as well. And these do come up in book sales and auctions from time to time. They are really beautiful. This is the one from 1942 by Cahill's, published, I think, in a series of maybe, 220 copies. This is the later one from 1953. And you get a little bit of his sense of humour. So he's going through here, or this is the introduction from the 1951 book, and it's written about, it praises woodcuts. He talks about the progressive publishers recognising the harmonious beauty of the woodcut combined with typography, goes through the subjects of it, and a little bit about the book. And you'll see the name there, Aaron A. Ravenel. Well, this is Kernoff just writing about himself under a pseudonym. His mother's maiden name was a Ravenel, and his middle name was Aaron. So he has just given himself her name to sing his own praises. And look, if you can't toot your own horn, no one's going to do it for you, you know. But what he produced was really beautiful. and often has very clear parallels to his painting. And this is the turf boats at Portobello. You know, when we think about why woodcut, particularly, why not etching or another print method? Obviously, he had trained as a cabinet maker. Wood was what he knew. He knew how to manipulate the surface. He had the tools. And presumably through his father, he also had access to wood. So everything kind of slots into place a lot. So here we are at Portobello Harbour with the turf boat. And again, this was something that he also painted. Many of Kernoff's works are in private collections, but they do come up a lot at auction. We saw earlier the Dublin Tram, that very early work that's so full of movement in colour. And actually he captures that same energy, I think, in this woodcut. The way that the tram, I hope it's probably a little hard to see on the screen, but the way that the front of the tram kind of lifts up and kind of seems to fly across the bridge, I think is really interesting. This is a scene from the ballet. Perhaps not as successful. This is the painting, maybe a little bit too detailed, but you still get that sense of sitting in the stalls, looking down, and of course the spotlight on the dancer. It's not surprising, given that Kernoff was designing for theatre, that he's friends with many people in Dublin theatre, that the Theatre Royal does pop up in a number of his paintings as a subject. Even there is one where he has popped in, where he's shown himself almost peeking out from behind one of the stage curtains. But this, I think, is one of his most successful. It captures the size of the Theatre Royal, the grandeur, that wonderful kind of almost expressionist backdrop that we have, and our dancer there in the centre. This is a woodcut of Nelson's Pillar, and we also have one of the drawings for this. So it gives us a little bit of a sense of how he put these together, how he would have made them, drawing it out on tracing paper and then maybe almost carving from that into the wood, because of course everything, he would draw it in reverse and then it would print it on the other way. So that's why we have a little difference here, but you can see very clearly that it's the same design. Okay, let's come on to something that we probably the highlight of of his work, and something we'll all know. Perhaps many of us, if we might not even know that we have seen a painting by Harry Kernoff, because if you walk into the Palace or Neary's or even Davy Byrne still today, often there is a Kernoff on the wall. Maybe a woodcut, maybe an oil. But he certainly became known as a frequenter of the Dublin Literary Pub. There's kind of conflicting accounts as to whether he himself was a drinker. I think maybe different things were true at different times of his life, but he's always there, this presence. And I think the pub was such an important part of the culture of the city at that time, and I suppose it is today, but it was where writers and artists met, where they kind of hang out a lot, and it was a place to go and exchange ideas. There's a wonderful description in a Dublin memoir from the 1950s by a British writer called Honor Tracy, who goes to a pub on her first morning in Dublin, kind of, I think, on a wave of Joycean excitement. But her description is fantastic. She writes that she made her way into a snug that had long been a favourite. In the greenish twilight, with an air of having never moved since the beginning of time, sat still three old gentlemen with the bottle noses and the split boots and the seedy bowler hats which they would gravely remove at the entrance of a woman. At no matter what time of the day, except in the holy hour, they were to be found there in session. And it's a wonder, if you haven't read the book, it gives this wonderful sense of the darkness, the kind of griminess, but yet the centrality of the pub at this time. And of course, Kernoff is visually contributing to, you know, if we look at O'Flaherty, Patrick Kavanagh, Brendan Behan, Austin Clarke, James Joyce, you know, it's this central place. So Kernoff makes Davy Byrne's his kind of place. We're going to look at one painting of Davy Byrne's today, but we could look at two or three others as well, if I'm honest. But this, I think, is his most accomplished work. If I was going to say, you know, if there's like a Kernoff masterpiece, I think this would have to become pretty close to it because of everything that he manages to fit into this wonderful painting. So Davy Byrne's, of course, on Duke Street, as many of us will know, is one of Dublin's most celebrated literary pubs, famed for its inclusion in Joyce's Ulysses, where Leopold Bloom goes for his glass of red wine and his Gorgonzola sandwich. So Kernoff definitely went to this pub in the 1940s knowing this. And so what does he do? Well, he goes across the road, first of all. He stays actually out of Davy Byrne's itself. We're sitting actually in the Bailey, looking across to the front of Davy Byrne's. And there is a mirror running across the bar. I wish I had brought a pointer. Anyway, well, just have to gesture wildly. So we're looking across to the other pub, and let's take in some of the details. You can see on either side of the window, there are two signs. So if we look at the far one, first of all, this yellow poster on the wall, we have Look at the Heffernans, a play by Brinsley McNamara, which is on at the Abbey Theatre. And on this side, in red and white, we have a sign for Romeo and Juliet at the Gate Theatre. So we have tragedy and comedy facing off across the bar. Brinsley Sheridan, just because it's kind of local interest, he was a playwright, but he also at this time was the registrar at the National Gallery of Ireland as well. So he was another multi-talented man. But Kernoff, again, had design connections to both of these theatres. We, as I say, have our mirror across the top of the bar, but outside you can just see the top of a woman's hat going by. There are three or four watercolour preparatory works for this, and the hat changes in each one. So he wasn't tied to any particular woman or any particular hat. We have then the bar itself full of bottles of liqueurs and other spirits. We have some oranges, bottles of stout, of course. We have the Red Cross armband up there, the sole kind of reference to the fact that we are in you know, the period of the emergency and World War II. And right at the front, you know, we're sitting at the bar looking at this. We have some bar mats, a little booklet about the Bailey, and a little bowl of peanuts to enjoy as well. If we look at the mirror, we have four figures reflected. This man here with the white hair around the back of his head. We have the kind of more portly gentleman on the other side. And then here with the grey hat and the glasses, this is a self-portrait of Kernoff. So he's sitting with us at the bar. In fact, the viewer is almost sitting with him. And then there's a woman just behind him. It wasn't unusual for artists to place themselves in their own work. We can, you know, if we think even just of the National Gallery's collection, we have Caravaggio does it, Jack Yates does it, why wouldn't Harry Kernoff do it? But it's a nice way of placing yourself within a particular scene. I would encourage you all to go up and have a look at this painting in person. And when you go, look here, okay, just to the left of Kernoff, because we know from a photograph that there was another figure in here. A man who is sitting and he's eating a bowl of soup. And the painting was sent to an exhibition of art in America in the late 1940s, early 1950s, and it was photographed for the catalogue. And in that, you can see that figure enjoying his soup. And then by the time this painting came back up at auction and into the National Gallery's collection, that painting was gone, or that figure was gone. But you can still see a little shadow of him if you look very carefully. So for whatever reason, Kernoff obviously just wasn't happy with how it looked. And I think he was right. It looks better as it is now. We can get a sense of how Kernoff worked these very detailed paintings. So generally what he would do would be to, on the site, work up a very detailed sketch. And we're going to look at a few different examples of these for the last part of the lecture. This is the sketch for Davy Byrne's. So, like I say, you can see different hats going past the window, different positionings of the figures. But important things are down in the lower left-hand corner, we have the date. So this was sketched on the 25th of November 1941. Often he even gives you a time of when he was there, which is, you know, very nice of him to do. And it's just covered with colour notes. So anywhere you see, like DB is dark brown, G for green. So he's making notes so that when he goes back to the studio, back to the easel, he knows what colours he wants to use for these scenes. We can find other kind of literary connections, of course, within his work. He was quite good friends with Patrick Kavanagh to the point where they go on a cycling holiday together down around Kerry in the Blasket Islands, which might have been fun. I'm not sure if I would like to go on a... I would go on a cycling holiday with Harry Kurnoff, but maybe not with Patrick Kavanagh, put it that way. But Kavanagh was certainly a fan of Kurnoff and his painting. And I suppose given that Kurnoff was living right next to the canal, it's not surprising that we get these similar, you know, scenes of the canal, that place of peace and quiet. We have our reading figure here. This is a wonderful painting that's now in the Hugh Lane collection. Something that I love about Kurnoff's works is his little dogs and swans. And again, you see them pop up and they're always just so full of character and the way they kind of turn and look at you. And I cycle to work in UCD every morning down along the canal. And there is something about it, even though they look like kind of caricatures or cartoons, there he captures this essence, I think, of the swans that you see along there. Of course, given that he's painting through the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, what we see in his work is also places that, I suppose, disappear, are places that he captures and then that change. And I suppose one of the most notable of these is his depiction of Wine Tavern Street, which doesn't look like this anymore. He paints this on a number of occasions, and even within his own lifetime, when this is shown, people are saying, in the future, these paintings will be representations of parts of Dublin that no longer exist, that are being demolished and knocked down day by day. Now, I suppose this is a good one to think about, because he does completely, while he gets that sense of the houses that were demolished in the 60s, he makes the hill far too steep. So it's a good warning that with any painting of a recognisable place, there is still artistic licence. And for all of the sketches that he does on the scene, things do change. But what's interesting when you look at different versions of this painting, of Wine Tavern Street, is he also changes, well, the weather. First of all, it's not always this wonderful blue sky, but sometimes the bus or the people or the carts and things change as well. So there's often little things just to keep our attention and our amusement. This is the initial sketch from 1934 for that scene of Wine Tavern Street. And again, it's filled with wonderful colour notes and wonderful details. It is worth, even though I suppose we, and particularly, well, I and many of you as people who live in Dublin, and work in Dublin, we treasure his paintings of this city that he is so much a part of. But of course, he did paint other places. He wasn't tied to them. And this is a wonderful painting that recently was sold through Adams of Belfast. Of Gantry's on a Sunday in Belfast. So we're in Victoria Park here looking across to the Harland and Wolff site, and that just this fantastic array of cranes and gantries and everything. We see his kind of Dublin docker transpose, his Belfast cousin here striding across the park, and of course a little bit of fun, the children playing with the toy boat in the shadow of this shipbuilding or the shipyard. This is the sketch for it. And again, you know, you can see that he initially had the children there, but in the painting, he has added in the other figure. He, of course, maintains kind of quite close links to London. Some of his family returned there and he visits quite a lot. This is a wonderful work from the Ulster Museum called A Bend in the Road near Richmond, Surrey. Again, full of all of that detail. Just, it's the same way of painting, but in a different place. So you have a red bus and different types of houses, but there's still the same idea, still the great little dogs running around. Again, this is the very detailed sketch for that. And of course, he goes back to Paris. He goes to Paris initially in the 1920s and then again in the 1930s. If you haven't, if you go up to Merrion Square and go in and have a look at this and the painting of Davy Burns, today, you know, go up if you can, go up after lunch and have a little look, because it will all be fresh in your head. This is a wonderful scene of Paris, probably first sketched in 1935 and painted in 1937. But again, like the Davy Burns painting, we're sitting almost with Kurnoff at this little table in the front, having our aperitif and looking out at the lengthening shadows in this Parisian scene. People coming from work, lots of great signage. We can feel almost that nice warm sunshine. So I want to finish with this painting, which isn't by Kurnoff, but we can see Kurnoff in it. So this is a painting by Maurice McGonagall, a close contemporary and friend of Cronos, and it's a painting showing the Olympia Dublin. And if you look at over on the far right-hand side, you see Harry Cronos in his hat and his glasses watching the play that is going on, which is often interpreted as the importance of being earnest. I'm not quite sure how we know that, but it makes sense. even just from these two figures, there's a definite Lady Bracknell type feeling about the figure in red. So when we come to kind of then think about Cronos, I've only looked at paintings up until around the early 1940s. He does continue to paint. He paints well into the 50s and 60s and really up until his death on the 25th of December 1974. But often his works in this later period are reworkings of sketches made early in the 20th century. He kind of, I think, revisits things as he gets older. He revisits maybe his kind of golden age, or indeed what he called the jazz age of Dublin through the 20s and 30s. We get a great sense in this work by McGonagall of Cronos as this figure who's constantly walking around Dublin, constantly of observing the city. And for me, that's why it's a good note to end on. But I hope I have, if you weren't familiar with Cronos, that you have a little bit of an idea about his work now. If you have any memories of him, I would love to hear them. When I first started working on him and kind of got interested in him, I wrote to the RTE archive and I asked them if they had any recordings of him. Just because you spend so long, like I've read his diaries, you know, you feel like you know someone when you do that. And they sent me an interview that was made very close to his death, about 3 months before he died in 1974. And it was for a programme called Going On 75. And it was to air in January 1975, about people who had lived for the first three quarters of the 20th century. And it was filmed in the studio in Stamer Street. He was standing there with the sketch of Davy Burns on the easel. And to hear his voice was just like, you know, really wonderful. But he dies before it airs. So he dies on Christmas Day 1974, so he almost gets to see it. But he is a fantastic artist. Go and look at his work, read about him, and enjoy. And thank you all so much for coming.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Dublin Festival of History. The festival is brought to you by Dublin City Council and organised by Dublin City Libraries, in partnership with Dublin City Council Culture Company. For further podcast episodes and for all the latest festival news, be sure to visit dublinfestivalofhistory.ie or follow us on Instagram.